It is time for our Vents Day segment, your chance to vent your spleen politely on a couple of topics in the news. Today's topics, again, whether we should regulate when candidates can do their fundraising. And the other topic is internet voting. You can join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So let me set up again the internet voting topic. The question now is whether it's time to begin internet voting, voting online. I mean, we perform credit card transactions online and do our banking there already, so what's the harm, right? Well, that's the optimistic view. The Oregon Senate just passed a bill to examine online voting pros and cons and report back to the state elections office, to the Secretary of State, by the end of the year, meaning no internet voting in Oregon just yet. The go-slow attitude tends to focus on identification. How can we prove via the internet that we are who we say we are? And what prevents hackers from messing up an election if it is in fact conducted online? Is this a worthwhile pursuit? If the bugs could be worked out, should we implement internet voting? Let's hear your thoughts on the pluses and the minuses. Would you like the convenience of, rather than even opening the envelope that comes from the clerk's office, sitting down at your computer, clicking a few boxes on the screen, and then sending it off? How would you feel about internet voting? Our other topic, again, is when candidates should accept donations. That bill in the California legislature would prevent fundraising by legislative members for the last 100 days of the legislative session or for a week after. The idea being that if you stop them from doing their fundraising at the time when there's the greatest pressure to make decisions on important bills, that at least you might get some of that whole sense of legalized bribery out of there. Maybe you can think a little more broadly, too, about political campaign fundraising and how we're doing it and what, if anything, can be curtailed, given that political speech or political spending is considered free speech in this country. Join us on The Exchange with your thoughts, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's talk about the online voting part of this. The Registered Guard had an editorial on this just a few days ago. The editorial reads, "It's not too soon to examine the promises and risks of online voting, and it's best to begin with a fresh appreciation of the stakes involved. On Thursday, the Oregon Senate voted 18-11 to pass Senate Bill 1515, which would establish a work group to study online voting and report to the Secretary of State by December. Among the issues to be reviewed are costs or savings, security, and compliance with federal election regulations. The House should approve SB 1515 so that Oregon can gain a realistic understanding of what may lie ahead." The advocacy here, not so much for the internet voting itself, but at least for exploring the concept. "The work group," the Register Guard writes, "would find that online voting has already been tried in pilot projects for military personnel who sometimes face delays in the delivery and return of their ballots. It will also find that online voting systems are emerging in a dozen other countries, notably Estonia, which launched a pilot program for municipal elections in 2005 and now allows voters to cast ballots electronically in parliamentary elections. In 2011, one quarter of parliamentary votes were cast by going to a website," this again in Estonia. "Estonia's system is built on a foundation that Oregon lacks, a universal electronically encoded identity card. The card provides a secure method of identifying voters and prevents anyone from casting multiple ballots. Oregon already allows voters to register online, and its registration rolls appear to be secure and reliable. But Americans have resisted proposals for a universal ID card, particularly a smart card that could be read by electronic devices, because of privacy concerns. In the absence of a universal ID, Oregon would need some other means of verifying online voters' identities. Oregon's vote-by-mail system relies on voter signatures, and cases of fraud have been exceedingly rare. Online voting would need to match or exceed that level of reliability." The Register Guard concludes, "Troubles with Cover Oregon and the recent hacking at the Secretary of State's office offer cautionary examples of the problems an online voting system might encounter. A study of how and whether those and other risks might be overcome would be useful in evaluating the internet's potential to become a useful tool in the processes of self-government." So at least a vote from the Register Guard in favor of continuing to examine the possibility of internet voting. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about this or the other concept on this Vents Day, which is when candidates should be accepting donations. Join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
morning.
Hi.
Many years ago, I knew a man that was in the employ of one of the state senators. The state senator was known as the Big One. I don't know what his name was. But his boss told him, the big one told him that whenever you're in doubt, vote for the study. It's safe. Nobody can bother, can get on your case about it.
Oh, because you're not actually making a position on something. You're just saying, let's look at this further.
Exactly. Costs money, accomplishes nothing, so what? At any rate, I can't imagine them being able to get internet voting to be 100% secure. Not that anything is, but internet activity is far from secure anywhere. The whole idea of the internet was to spread information, not to hide it. And so trying to hide information on the internet is really difficult.
Yeah, that is one of the major concerns I think that everybody would have. It's like, well, okay, yes, I do my credit card transactions, but I also have to give this long string of numbers and don't know if we want to go for a system like that that would allow you to vote online. And as I know, and as has been discovered, obviously, it's not just a matter of being concerned that somebody's going to hack your system, but somebody could hack another system and end up with a whole bunch of identity numbers, as happened with the Target hacking of a few months ago.
Exactly. On campaign contributions, I read this some years ago. A man suggested that candidates don't accept campaign contributions. A group such as the Federal Election Commission or the State Election Commission accepts the donations. In that, you know, I want to donate $1,000 to Charlie Jones. I send the, you know, in Charlie Jones, you know, I donate it into the commission, and they list it as Charlie Jones just got a donation, you know, in this week got this amount of money in donations.
Mm-hmm.
And then all right, Charlie Jones has absolutely no idea who donated to him.
Really?
Yeah.
So it would all be anonymous.
Exactly. I would know that I donated to Charlie Jones, and I could even go tell Charlie Jones that I donated to him, and he'd go, well, that's really wonderful, thank you. And that would be the end of that, because he wouldn't have any way of knowing that I had donated it.
Well, but then the people who did give donations to Charlie Jones would make it abundantly clear to Charlie Jones that, hey, you know, I helped you out, so.
Well, yeah, but how would he know?
If you didn't tell him, in other words, yourself.
Even if you didn't make the donation, you went up and said, hi, I donated to you. I gave this much money. And he'd say, well, that's really interesting. Thank you. Because how could he know whether you did or not?
Huh. Interesting. So the benefit here is that people really don't know who their major fundraisers are or who their major benefactors are?
Exactly. That way, you know, they don't have any obligation to people who give them money.
All right. Some interesting thoughts. Thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate it. We are talking on this Vent Stay about a couple of political issues. Number one, internet voting, whether it's time to consider actually voting via the internet, if the bugs can be worked out, if we can get some security assurances, and if there'd ever be enough to put your mind at ease about internet voting. The other one is about the timing of campaign fundraising. As in this bill in the California legislature right now, Senate Bill 1101 would ban fundraising by legislators in the final 100 days of the legislative session and for 7 days after the session ends. As the Sacramento Bee's editorial points out, this is when much of the political pressure is applied on critical legislation such as the state budget and the high-stakes bills that generally appear in the last days of each session. We'll get more into what the Sac Bee had to say about that. And, of course, its headline for the editorial is the bill would actually stem legalized corruption, which is how a lot of people refer to this whole process. The fact is that you give money to legislators or people in positions of power generally and expect to get something favorable in return. It's all perfectly. You can choose a different adjective yourself, perhaps, but it's legal. How do you feel about that? How should we be regulating political campaign contributions? Is a blackout window one idea that comes to mind? Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Pam and Dexter. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Hi. Well, I believe that money in politics is basically destroying our planet, and our legislators haven't been making laws for the people for, I don't know, since the 1940s maybe. The fossil fuel, I mean, I don't think this blackout's going to make one bit of difference, so they just give the money a little earlier. As long as they can give money, they're buying the politicians. The politicians make the laws for the people who give them the money. It's, you know, it goes to the highest bidder. And just this last Thursday, I went to hear a talk by Guy McPherson, who has a blog, Nature Bats Last, and he was talking about the feedback loops for climate change. First one was in 2010. We have 30 feedback loops that have kicked in, which literally is destroying our habit for the biosphere. I mean, it's really disturbing stuff. And why haven't we had any significant action? The fossil fuel industry, the most powerful industry in the history of humanity, has paid the politicians to drag their feet and not do anything significant to slow this beast down. And it's really shameful, and it's sad that that people can be bought, but that's the system we have. I would suggest publicly funded campaigns only, where, you know, each candidate's given a certain amount of money from the government, no influence by industry, and also truth in advertising would be really nice. I don't know whatever happened to that idea. It's just the root of all of our problems, and until that gets taken, but it's a catch-22. The legislators aren't going to change the laws, because then that's biting the hand that feeds them. So we, the people, have to do it. You know, so it's very tricky, but it's really, in my mind, it's destroying our habit for life, and I don't know where to go from here. I mean, this guy McPherson, if you guys want to check out, it's on YouTube, you can check it out, but he basically says it's too late, and by 2030, most of the species on this planet are going to be gone.
So we're kind of stuck in the whirlpool already, is what he's saying?
Yeah, the 30 feedback loops have kicked in, and the methane, the permafrost, all this stuff, it's 100 times more powerful than CO2, and it burns for like 20 years. And we're 30 years behind right now, so we're seeing what we did 30 years ago is how our climate is now. So in the next 20 years, it's going to be exponentially worse. I mean, the forest fires are just, you know, it's just going to go out of control. And all I can think of is it's because the politicians have dragged their feet and catered to the fossil fuel industry instead of, you know, energy conservation and clean renewables and educating the public about how dire the situation is. They've done everything they can to, you know, keep feeding the monster that gives them the money so they can get reelected.
All right.
It's a vicious cycle, but
thanks for that, Pam.
Happy news, right?
Yeah, really. I appreciate the perspective, certainly. And there are lots of other issues that we all can think about, that ways in which our political system might be different if the way in which our candidates were funded were different. It's really, really hard to change the system right now, given the series of court decisions, Buckley versus Vallejo back in the 1970s, that identified spending as speech, the Citizens United decision that really opened the door for corporate contributions and really made the super PACs possible. How do we go back, if we want to go back, and change this system? I mean, is this idea in California of at least a window in which there's no fundraising one that bears some fruit in your mind? Join us on the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day. Talk about campaign fundraising, the timing of campaign fundraising, the amount of it, the control of it, all that stuff on the table. And our other topic is about internet voting, whether it's time for us to cast our ballots via the internet. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Adam and Eugene writes about internet voting. It is only as secure as the Secretary of State's computers. In Oregon, we were hacked recently, and we are now in the dark about contribution records. And that's the reference made in that Register Guard editorial. Yes, in fact, there was a hacking of the Secretary of State's office, and parts of that website had to be deactivated for a time because of that hacking. So these are the very people who ultimately would probably control online voting should it come to fruition in Oregon. At this point, they're just talking about studying it. It has only passed the Senate and not yet the Oregon House to even get to the point of study. Here's a call from Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Hi there. Something that has always bothered me is when we vote, and now in Oregon, I moved from California, so in Oregon, this is done much better. But the checking of signatures, in California, they stopped doing that. And you would go in to vote, and you could be anybody, and you just had a name in mind to take off the list and use their vote. And it seems like that wouldn't happen, but the people were not trained to watch that very carefully. And what, you know, my problem is that there's always, after every election, there are reports of how many people didn't vote and how low the percentage is of people who actually go out and do the voting. Here in Oregon, I appreciate that we can mail them in because then our signature is there to be verified. So that is my point, is that you can stuff the ballot box in split seconds with the computers we've got with all the names of the people who didn't actually vote. It can be counted up, and those votes can be used unbeknownst to those registered voters who did not go out to vote. Those votes can be used on their behalf. If one wants to put their mind to it, there's a way to steal those votes.
So,
and I'd also like to say I appreciate the first caller who had the idea of the anonymous donation procedure, having someone receive them and then distribute them without the candidate knowing who they were receiving it from. I think that's a pretty good idea and sounds pretty easy to implement.
Yeah,
okay.
I just wonder what you could do about particular limits on dollar amounts, though, because, I mean, what's to say that somebody who has a lot of money would not want to put some money in anonymously?
That could be, yeah.
All right, thanks for the call, Julie. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Let us move on here on this Vents Day. We're talking about Internet voting and campaign contributions, and particularly this idea in California about the timing of campaign fundraising. Email here from Debbie in Talent. She writes, even though I support a shortened campaign period just to lessen the length of the crazy train, honesty is legislated at the poll by who we elect. An attempt to curtail dishonesty is really just whack-a-mole. And the Internet is the wild, wild west. I'll take a chance with my credit card, but not my vote. That from Debbie in Talent. Here is Tony in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Good morning. I'm pretty sure the most important advance in democracy, which was an Australian invention, or maybe New Zealand, Antipodean anyway, was the secret ballot. It came in the end of the 19th century. And it was the greatest advance, and most of the world has taken to it. One little place in the world that has rejected the idea of the importance of the secret ballot being Oregon.
How is Oregon not doing secret ballots?
They do postal voting. You know, that's fairly common here, I think.
What is?
Postal. Oh, mail-in ballot, then.
Sure, okay. But how is
that's not a secret ballot.
Why is it not a secret ballot?
Clearly, you don't witness the person voting independent of who's around them. I mean, there's plenty of evidence. You just have to look up George Galway, the awful left-wing guy in Britain.
Wait, is he awful because he's left-wing? Or?
Yes.
Please proceed.
But he's also responsible for organizing in his community in London, for his constituency, the vote through the Muslims, who, of course, females are not allowed to do anything, so the husbands vote for them. And he simply organized that they send in their ballots by mail and voted for him. So it's documented that this sort of fraud goes on. Oregon, of all places, Rajneesh and all that, is susceptible to those sort of cults that would possibly be able to influence people. So the whole concept of going to the Internet voting is lunatic in the extreme. Postal voting should be stopped.
You know, there's always been that concern about whether there would be voting parties. You know, bring your ballots to church, let's all vote together. But
that happened, of course.
That happened is what you're saying?
Didn't you listen? I was talking about George Galloway. Yes, it happened in London.
All right, I'm talking about in Oregon, though. And
there's differences.
Very little evidence, from what I understand, about anything happening like that with people voting groups.
Well, it's very difficult to prove voter fraud, but the country is trying to stamp out a lot of it with measures like, you know, identification. And yet, of course, there's a certain party that which benefits from the fraud, so they wouldn't agree to that sort of thing. But Oregon's going in the wrong direction.
All right, so we'll count you as a vote against Internet voting. Tony, thanks for your time. Dennis in Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day. Internet voting and campaign contributions are topics.
Hi. So I think on the campaign contributions, let them go for as long as they need to. But how about we just stop the campaign 90 days before we vote, and there's no campaigning.
Stop it or start it 90 days before we vote?
No, just stop it 90 days before we vote. No campaigning anymore. You get your all, you know, you can campaign up until, like, you can start 4 years out and campaign all the way up until 90 days before the vote, and then all campaigning, all advertising, everything stops. People get to have the time to reflect on everything that's said, think about what they want to vote on and how they want to vote, and then they vote.
You'd have to change some pretty well-ingrained habits there, though, wouldn't you? Because of the fact, Dennis, that it seems like a lot of people don't even begin to pay attention until long about the middle of October in a general election.
Well, maybe we have too many people voting. In other words, maybe there's a lot of people who vote because they like the way you look or the color of your hair or how sexy you talk. There seems to be some research that says that that's how a lot of people vote. And so maybe if people actually had to make an effort to find, to think about what they were voting about and what really would do the best job for them without being manipulated by the mass media and a lot of money, maybe we'd get a truer vote.
So the campaigning would stop 90 days before, and would we still have voters' pamphlets and other things to allow people to collect their own information?
Well, they'd already have that information. Mm-hmm. You could send out your voters' pamphlet up until 90 days before the vote. But after that, when the 90 days starts, there's nothing. There's no television about it. There's no radio about it. There's no nothing about it until the day of the vote, and then we vote.
All right. Thanks for that, Dennis. Appreciate it. This is Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange. Final thought comes in an email from Joe in Talent as we wrap up talking about Internet voting and the timing of campaign fundraising. Joe writes, "Do away with any private or corporate donations altogether. It's painfully obvious it doesn't work for the 99%. I'm getting tired of pushing people to vote between two choices that will never represent us or make choices for anyone but their big money donors." That from Joe in Talent. So obviously some clear feelings about campaign finance in this country and a clear sense that perhaps there are some changes in the offing. Let's continue to talk about this as we will on future editions of Vents Day. Thanks for listening.